and I signed up for a Knitting 101 beginner's knitting class. And it was like magic. You know, not only did I find a hobby, but I found my community. And I, you know, I've made so many friends, and it's just been, it's been magical. But it was like all of a sudden I was at home. It's the kind of place where I had been lonely and a little bit afraid, had all of a sudden it had created a place for me that I knew I was home.
You're listening to Power Pearls Podcast, and this is episode 52 with Beth Casey, owner of Lorna's Laces and Mrs. Crosby. Hey, Power Pearlers! Today's guest, Beth Casey, shares how her passion for yarn took her on a journey to becoming a yarn company owner, and you get a little behind-the-scenes taste of what it takes to create a yarn collection. Lorna's Laces first hit the hand-dye scene way before this craze began, so I think you'll really enjoy my chat with Beth. Also, stick around until the end because Beth shares how you can get your chance to win a mini skein set. And before we jump in, it is time for a little Patreon shout out. I'd like to give thanks to my latest supporters, starting with Jane Schneider, Melanie Fiedler, and Christina Olson. Thank you so much for your support. It means so much more than you know. And you all know that I've been talking quite a bit about the perks and rewards that I offer through Patreon. And right now I'm giving a really awesome holiday incentive that I want to share with you because it ends January 1st, which is just 10 days from today's episode. And if you want to become a supporter for Power Pearls for just $1 per month, you'll get some seriously cool stuff. So I want to give you a quick little rundown of what you'll get. So here it is. You'll get patron-only blog posts, audio recordings, and a private video stream. You'll also get your name mentioned on the podcast. And if you'd like a social shout-out with your website, you'll also get my journal writing challenge designed with yarn crafters in mind to help ignite those creative juices. And you'll get my audio workshop called The Secret Sauce to Creating a Thriving Yarn Crafting Business. You'll also get the show notes from my live video every Friday, Power Pearls Unplugged, along with extras such as tutorials. And you'll also get the audio only version of the video. So you can listen on the go. So you can download and listen on the go. So I think that's some pretty cool stuff. And you know what? That's not all, because I'm always feeling pretty generous. And so I'll provide extra posts from time to time that are for patrons only. And you will get all of those juicy tidbits. And again, that's for just $1 a month. So like I said, this offer ends in 10 days from this recording. January 1st, this all goes bye-bye. So hurry up. And you can find out more by going to patreon.com/PowerPearlsPodcast. And that's patreon.com/PowerPearlsPodcast. Hey, Power Pearls listeners, I want to welcome you to another episode of Power Pearls Podcast. Today, I have Beth Casey, who has been plying the world with yarn since 2003, and she is the owner of Lorna's Laces, which is one of the first hand-dyed yarn companies. So she was privileged to witness a revolution in the way we look at yarn. And then, 10 years later, she introduced Mrs. Crosby, unleashing a whole new range of vibrant possibilities. So without further ado, I would like to welcome Beth Casey to the show.
Hey, great to be here. Thanks, Kira.
Well, I am thrilled and honored to have you on because, you know, I haven't had a whole lot of owners of yarn companies on the show just yet. And I know that the listeners are really anxious to learn, like, you know, what happens behind the scenes and, like, you know, how do you dye yarn? And you're one of the first companies that has done that. So I'm hoping that we can dig into that. So I guess I just want to start asking you, though, how you entered this wonderful world of fiber. You know, why yarn? Why start a yarn company? You know, start there and share your story, Beth.
Okay. So if you get in the Wayback Machine, in a previous lifetime, I used to sell college textbooks. So, you know, when either you or your kids go to the bookstore at the beginning of the semester and they spend about $1 billion on their books for the season, and then at the end of the semester, they go back and they get back like a nickel for them? Well, I was the person that was responsible for that. And I traveled regionally selling books to college professors. But I got bored with it. I did it very well, and I did it for about 10 years. And I won trips, and I had all this really great stuff going on, but it ceased to be a challenge for me. And I got to the point where I was incredibly bored and miserable. I worked from home, and I would call my colleagues every morning, and we'd go, ugh, what are we doing today? And we were very unhappy. And one morning, my husband, after having listened to me doing that for months, looked at me and said, one of us is calling Tim, my boss, and resigning today. Are you going to make the phone call or should I?
Wow.
Yeah. And so I put on the big girl pants and I called my boss and I resigned. And I spent the next 3 years trying to figure out what was next for me. I studied bread baking at the French Culinary Institute in Manhattan. I walked dogs. I watched far too much daytime television. And one day I was sitting around the house trying to figure out what I wanted to do. And I was looking, you know, as knitters do, I'm bored. So I'm going to look through a magazine and see if I can find a new project. And I opened up the back of the magazine. You know, this is over 10, almost 15 years ago, and things are different now. But remember those little half-inch want ads that used to be in the back of magazines?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
One of those said, yarn from company for sale can be relocated. And I went, huh, I wonder what this is all about. So I grabbed my husband. I said, let's take the dogs for a walk on the lakefront. And I talked about this opportunity. He said, find out what it's about. So that was the fall of 2002. And I entered the Edmund magazine. I talked to, and it was a woman named Lorna Miser. Anyway, so I got in touch with her. I went out to visit her in Northern California and took a look at the company that she had. And over the course of that fall, we negotiated a contract, and in the January of 2003, I was introduced to the world at the TNNA show, the National Needle Arts Association big annual trade show, as the new owner of Mona's Laces.
Wow. So it was like serendipity, wasn't it? I mean, you see, yeah, and that's how it happens. It's like just this little moment in time, you see this little ad, you know, in a magazine, and the rest is history. So that's really amazing. So, okay, so this was back in 2003, and now I guess we can maybe fast forward a little bit to now, you know, as far as what it is, you know, like sort of the day to day, or maybe, you know, creating a collection. You know, I guess the big question is the hand-dyed scene. So what was it like when you started with the company? I mean, you know, Lorna's Laces was one of the first doing this, right? Is that correct?
Absolutely. There was probably fewer than a dozen companies doing it at the time.
Mm-hmm.
On the scale of people that would go to TNNA and that kind of thing.
Okay. And, you know, so what is it like when you're getting ready to put together, you know, kind of color stories for the season? Can you share a little bit about that process?
Yeah, it's kind of fun. I mean, it's one of those things that is ongoing and something we do at a specific time. It's both of those things. So, I mean, we're dyeing yarn every day and we're playing in the dye pots, and something might come up that we like, so we put it in a basket. We've got this big basket of yarn. And then a couple times a year, a few months before market, we sit down and we look at the basket and we say, we look at what we have and what we like. There'll be some that get pushed off for another season. This is too autumnal and we're working on spring, or vice versa. Or this seems a little bit like something we did the season before or a year before, so we want to put it off and put it back in the back of the pile. Or sometimes something that's been hanging around for a long time just feels right. Or something that felt right doesn't feel right anymore because it's suddenly feeling dated. And we, you know, there are days where we go, let's talk about what we, you know, some of this happens serendipitously. Sometimes we think about what do we want to do for this season. And, you know, sometimes we go and look and see what Pantone is doing. Frankly, I've never found that to be extraordinarily inspirational. and we spend more time just sort of paying attention to what we see out in the world. One of the things that's nice about being a company like ours, and the fact that we dye yarn as opposed to buying it dyed, so, you know, sort of the mainstream companies, they're buying yarn from wherever they get it, South America, Europe, whatever, and they have to make those decisions years ahead of time on what they're going to do in terms of color. On the other hand, we can go, hey, this is what feels good today, and we can dye yarn today and have it available tomorrow. And so we can be very, very current because we're nimble.
Hmm. Well, and that's just it. I mean, you can make a decision because, like you said earlier, you've got these dye pots. So is it like just you and like, you know, five other people? Or, I mean, it's like a small group, I'm guessing. And you guys are like really, you've got your hands in there, you know? And I also think, I mean, you know, the Pantone forecasts are helpful. I mean, that's, you know, I guess, I mean, that's great. I mean, people know what the trends are, but the consumer just likes to see pretty things. And if you are creating pretty things or things that you think are pretty and they're coming from that place that excites you, then that's going to translate into your yarn. Wouldn't you agree? Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know what? And you, it's right in the head. There are six of us. And I think that's kind of a nice thing. When you are a small group, we know each other well. And we, you know, there's a lot of different points of view here and a lot of different age groups. And so it gives us an opportunity to sort of put our finger on the pulse of what different people are thinking about and liking.
Exactly. And how many seasons do you put out? Is it two a year, or do you have any like supplemental collections or anything like that? Like, what's the general kind of framework?
Generally, we do two seasons a year. Mm-hmm. Every once in a while, something will capture our imagination in the middle of the year and we'll put something out. But fundamentally, we look at it as two seasons.
Mm-hmm. And then as far as designs are concerned, do you create the designs? Because, I mean, you know, as we know, you know, its patterns really do help to sell those yarns. So how do you seek designers? You have your own in-house designers. Are you designing? Like, how does that work?
For us, we have made a decision many years ago that we are good at making yarn, and that there are so many designers out there that are great at making patterns and designing garments and accessories and all that sort of stuff, that we would go ahead and work with them. We provide yarn support to them, and they in turn do the creating. It was simpler for us that way, and I think we're getting better designs because we do it that way. We really allow people to tap their own creativity to come up with stuff for us rather than us dictating what we think is going to be great. We want them to do that because that's what they do best.
Yeah, I think that's a really great approach, because then also you can work with several different designers, right? I mean, you know, because some companies, they just have that one, you know, a design director with a few other people beneath them. So if you are working with, you know, different designers, depending on the season, you know, you just have more variety and, you know, just a nice contrast in the collection, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think you can look at it one of two ways, is that I think when you do have the kind of thing where you're dealing with a particular design director, there's more continuity, and you can look at that, you know, that's one way to look at it. Or you can look at it the way we do, is that having variety is good. Mm-hmm. I think both ways are perfectly valid ways to approach it, but we've chosen the latter.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So, you know, I know that right now it's a little bit tricky in the yarn world, just to kind of mix it up and really make this exciting. I thought, you know, yeah, that's a real, you know, thing that's a challenge. Let's call it a challenge, right? That some companies are having right now. And so I'm just curious, like, how are you kind of rising above that? Do you feel affected by the kind of, it's like, you know, this ebb and flow that's going on right now. But how are you weathering the storm? Or maybe you don't feel like there's a storm.
You know, I think everybody is feeling it to a certain extent. That's a really good question. It's one of those things where, you know what, you put your head down and you go to work every day. And you do your best to, we do our best to come up with creative new ideas to excite the consumer. And hopefully we do things that, we find things that make them want to knit and knit with our yarn.
Yeah. And, you know, I also think that, I mean, it's sort of like a belief system too, as far as, you know, from the business aspect, that you're always going to kind of innovate and iterate, as they say, you know, so because when things come up and things change, and they always will in the market, right? People's tastes change.
Absolutely.
And, you know, there's a lot of yarn out there. There's a lot of yarn, right? So how do you feel like you differentiate from all those other companies? And why do you think from a business perspective that, you know, you're able to kind of do that? You know, just kind of, like I said, that innovate and kind of change with the tides, so to speak. You know, do you have like a certain, you know, habit or kind of approach to the way you do business to keep going, to stay motivated and excited?
That's a hard question to answer, if I'm honest.
Maybe I'm putting you on the spot too much.
No, that's good. It's a good question. And I'm just trying to sort of think it through. You know, I think a lot of it has to do, again, with looking around and seeing what's going on. It has to do with listening and paying attention, listening to what's going on Ravelry, seeing what people are, you know, what are people talking about in social media, trusting my team here to see what they're talking about and what their friends and are talking about as being interesting. Then it gets back to the thing I mentioned earlier about being nimble. You know, because we are the kind of company we are, we can react and we can do things and make decisions quickly so that we are responding to what consumers are itching for.
Oh, yeah. Well, and that, yeah, because staying small, there's something really powerful about staying small, don't you think?
Absolutely. You know, it's funny. I remember my second TNNA, first or second TNNA, and I was sitting at my booth and I was talking to one of the other vendors, and I had said, you know what, it was my second TNNA because it was my first one, the very first one I went to, Lorna was there with me, and this was my first one alone, and I was like, you know, we're having a lot of fun and we're working really hard, and I'm kind of happy with the size of my company right now. We're moving along and, you know, I'm making a living and I'm happy. And she turned to me and she goes, you know, oh, that's crazy. I wanted to be the biggest yarn company or the biggest hand dye company there is. And I thought, well, good for you. But you know what? I'm happy here. I'm, you know, I've got people that work with me that I like. I'm making a living. I'm providing other people with a living. And that makes me feel very happy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, I think you have that touch point in so many different areas of your business as opposed to, you know, someone that is the owner of a very large business. You know, you have to make choices and sometimes step out of the creative aspect. So from your perspective as a small business owner, you're still there designing the season, you know, the collections and, you know, choosing the colors and, you know, and sometimes that's what kind of goes away in a much larger company. And then also going through the different lines of communication can really make things pretty clunky and slow the process down. So, I mean, that it's really nice to hear that perspective because there's nothing wrong with staying small and you have that control and kind of stay on that grassroots level, if you will.
Yeah, I like it this way. You know, it's an easy thing. And having people that I trust and respect that work with me every day is such a nice thing. And I think that if you get too big, you lose that. You're managing stuff and you know what? I want to still be a worker and not a manager. I mean, clearly I have to manage things. There's no getting around that. This is a business and I'm at the top of the heap. Actually, when you're at the top, you're at the bottom because, you know, it all flows downhill and I'm the one that catches it all. Yeah, there's something nice about having everybody here and, you know, and being able to just, and knowing what's going on and you can sort of take the temperature of what's going on and how people are feeling. I mean, the Cubs won the World Series last week.
Yeah.
We took the day off. Come on. and it's like, you know that. You can just sort of have, you can feel what's going on and you just know your people.
Yeah.
And you take care of them the best way you know how.
Exactly. You got the perks, right? So, you know, how, you know, in your career, your early career, what was your biggest struggle, you know, with the company? Like, what would you say was that, you know, that first challenge for you?
My biggest challenge has been, I think, the uncertainty of it early on. I mean, it was a big stretch. I mean, I went from having a very secure job, you know, with all the benefits, health insurance, and all those things that go along with working for a big corporation, to mortgaging my house to take a risk.
Hmm.
And knowing that, you know, I mean, I always knew I was going to make it, but it was a lot of stress and it was, It's the best decision I ever made in my life, but I put a lot on the line. And, you know, I worked 7 days a week, 12 hours, 15-hour days for a very, very long time. I think, you know, and that was one of the, you know, the hardest things. The other thing that I think is one of the scariest things for me, and this gets back a little bit to your earlier question as well about challenges that you find, is when you own the company, you're responsible for more than just yourself. And that's always been something that I take very seriously. And knowing that, you know, it's like I was so proud of one of my staff. They bought their first condo a year or so ago. And super proud of her, really happy to see her having been able to do it. But then there was sort of the piece of me that's like, yikes, I've got a new mortgage payment too. Which isn't true, but it's part of the big challenges, the things that I think about very seriously.
Well, it's those little moments like that, that, you know, you feel empowered. You're like, wow, I am able to take care of other people, that you had that ability. And you said something, you know, a few moments ago, and I hear this, this is sort of like the kind of the overarching sentiment that I hear is when you start, you know, you start a business, you believe it's going to happen. Like you just know it's going to happen, or you have this belief. And I think that is the ingredient. It's like, you just know, it's like you're putting a lot on the line, but you're like, well, this is just going to happen. You know, you work those 7 days a week. But it was like, well, this is what I got to do. It's going to happen. And I think that that is, and I'm just saying this sort of for those people listening, and sometimes for myself, when I get a little bit, you know, down, and that happens to all of us, like, oh gosh, I don't know. Can I make this work? I don't know. I don't know. You know what I mean? But it's that, it's again, it's that overarching knowing and confidence that you can make it work. And I think that's a key. That's a key kind of behavior or thought to have.
Absolutely. The failure is not an option. You can't allow that to be part of your internal conversation.
Yeah. And if you do fail, you know, you learn from that. But like you, you know, being an entrepreneur and a business owner, you would have embraced the fear or the failure and figured it out. I'm sure that's probably your thought. You didn't leave it open, but you thought, well, it's fine because I'm just going to figure it out anyway.
Right. You know, and I think that there's a common misconception that entrepreneurs are enormous risk takers. And I don't necessarily think that's true. I think that we look at a lot of angles and make really informed decisions. And because we have, speaking for myself, because I've looked at things from all kinds of different angles, I make good decisions and informed decisions so that it isn't the kind of risk that you might think it is. Mm-hmm. That somebody from the outside might think, oh my gosh, you know, it's sort of like in the risks you make are calculated, you know. When I talked about mortgaging the house, well, we had been living in that house for 10 years. So we had a fair amount of equity, and there was, you know, and I was looking at other people that were buying in the building, and, you know, they were paying X number of dollars more than what we had paid. And so it was like, okay, so if I take out this equity line against the apartment to be able to make, to buy this company, even if it all goes belly up, we'll still be in the same place that the new neighbor is. So you make decisions based on their own decisions. Or like when I decided to start Mrs. Crosby, I took a look at stuff and I made, you know, how much is this going to cost? How much is that? What are we going to need to put into it? What do we need to get out of it within a year, within 2 years, to have it make sense?
Right. I mean, because at that point, you knew that, you know, you had a bit of a, I don't know, cushion, or, you know, that risk, even though if it was, you said it well, so I really don't have to repeat it, but that idea of knowing that things would be okay. If you took this risk, you know, the bottom wouldn't fall out because you've got kind of like a plan B, I guess, in a way, you know?
Absolutely.
So it's really being smart. And I think that that's an important point for anybody starting out, just to really be thinking about that. So you can kind of have that space, that mind space, if you will, to stay open and creative and think of new ideas, you know? Yeah, this is great. So let me see. I'm going to shift gears a little bit here because I wanted to, I usually ask this first, you know, just kind of asking you about your knitting, because you're a knitter, right? You're a
Absolutely.
So yeah. when did you first discover knitting?
So I started knitting. Actually, my story isn't very typical. I mean, I'm sure I knit something as a little kid or crocheted the longest chain stitch thing ever, but I was raised in a household where we were told that we weren't creative, that we weren't artists, we were athletes. And so it wasn't something that I ever embraced, the idea that I could be an artist. And when I got the job with the publishing company, I grew up in St. Louis, and the job was in Kansas City. And so I moved to a town that I didn't know a soul, and the job was a job that I worked from home. So I didn't have any sort of, I didn't have any friends, and I didn't have any way of really making friends because, you know, no one was coming by and saying, hey, do you want to go to lunch? Or a bunch of us are going to happy hour tonight. Do you want to join us? And so I was pretty darn lonely. And I had a couple of colleagues that, you know, lived across town. And just a handful of times a year, we would get together and have meetings for various reasons. And one day they both showed up wearing like sweaters that were kind of similar. And I was like, wow, those are pretty. And they both said, oh, I made them myself. And I was like, you're kidding me. And so the next day, I was living in Kansas City. I got in my car and I drove over to the Yarn Barn in Kansas, in Lawrence. And I signed up for a Knitting 101, beginner's knitting class. And it was like magic. You know, not only did I find a hobby, but I found my community. And I, you know, I've made so many friends and it's just been, it's been magical. But it was like all of a sudden I was at home. It's the kind of place where I had been lonely and a little bit afraid, had all of a sudden it had created a place for me that I knew I was home.
So what is the biggest lesson do you think knitting has taught you?
Oh, wow. You are asking good questions today. Couple of things. One, I think it's taught me patience. And the other thing is that you can always rip back and start over, that there are very few things in life that are written in stone, and that for the most part, you can rip back and re-knit, go back and rework your life. You can figure out ways, you know, you can zig, you can zag, and find a way to get to where you need to be.
Well, that's a beautiful analogy. You know, because I think that just that act of ripping and starting over is, it's like you have another chance, you know? And I don't know about you, but because, you know, especially with the magazine and the knitting, you know, the audience, there's a lot of fear. I don't know why. I mean, there's fear. And I mean, I'm not, you know, I get it. But the fear to try something new in knitting, you know, I feel like it's, hey, you can rip back. You can start over. And I love how you use that example. And that's exactly what you can do because at the end of the day, you know, that yarn isn't going to fall apart and you can try. You can keep trying over and over. Your yarn might get a little bit kinked, but you can keep doing it again and again.
And it'll be okay, you know, and I think that's so true. And I think another thing that always kind of, I try to discourage people being afraid of color. You know, there was many, many years ago, oh God, you might be old enough to remember this. Remember when we got our seasons done and people would walk around stores going, I'm a winter, so I can't wear X. Or I am a summer, so I must buy Y. Mm-hmm. And certainly everybody has colors that look better on them than others. And I think most of us gravitate towards those colors sort of naturally and instinctively. But there's so many, it's like, don't be afraid of it. If there's a color that makes your heart happy, then buy yarn in that color and knit something. You know, if it isn't the prettiest thing next to your face, I don't know, make socks out of it. Make something else that you're not wearing around that, you know, because if that color makes your heart happy, it's going to look good on you because you're going to love it. And so don't be afraid. Don't be afraid to say, you know, don't go, oh, the sweater in the magazine is blue, so I have to make a blue sweater. It's one of the great things about being a stitcher is that we get to make those decisions for ourselves and pick the things that look best on us and make us happy.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I tend to kind of be a little, not afraid, but I'll knit things that are, they always seem to be the same similar color, like neutral colors, because, you know, sometimes working with a very, you know, colorful yarn or a variegated yarn, I'm like, ah, I don't know, you know, if that's me. But I actually did. I actually started doing, you know, working with more color, because it's like, why not celebrate, you know, celebrate with color and, you know, pair it up with something neutral, you know, because it's like, it's definitely a statement. It's definitely, you know, a statement about who we are. Yeah.
And nothing's bad is going to happen. I mean, they can't take away your birthday because you picked a bad color.
I've never heard of that. That what you said before, the phrase, like, I'm a winter or I'm a summer. I guess I am. I didn't think I was that much younger than you, but maybe it's a Midwestern thing. I don't know. I mean, I'm from New York and I never heard that. But anyway, I thought that was really kind of interesting. So thanks for sharing.
Yeah.
So do you have like a funny or unusual knitting story that you'd like to share, Beth?
Oh, yeah, I do. We were talking about this stuff the other night. One of the TNNA shows that we were at in Columbus, Ohio, so it would have been one of the shows in June, and I had just finished setting up the booth, and I had meant to get my nails done before the show, and life happened, and I just didn't get them done, and we had been setting up the booth, and I, you know, ripped a nail. My hands looked like a mess, and I didn't want to go through the show having that. So here I am in a strange town and trying to find a nail salon, and I didn't have a ton of time, and I'm running around looking for all the nail salons, and I walked into one of them and said something about being at the convention center, and she's like, oh, what convention are you here with? And I said, oh, the National Needle Arts Association. She goes, oh, is that a tattoo convention? And I just laughed in her. I was almost rude. I just sort of like, if I would have had coffee, I would have spit on her, because I just laughed so hard, and I explained to her what it was. And I was way less cool when I explained what it was compared to when she thought I was going to a
That's
tattoo
hilarious.
Thing.
Do you remember that? I don't know if it was in Columbus when TNNA was there. And by the way, you guys, well, I think the listeners know by now, because I talk about TNNA a lot, but it's the National Needle Arts Association trade show. But it was like all these people walking around dressed like zombies. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
For the first time I saw someone walk by, you know, he had like a shirt on that said something about Satan. And I was like, what's going on? And then I, you know, started to realize. And then there was a zombie knitting. Did you see the zombie knitting?
I don't think so.
Yeah, that was really funny. That was good.
No, and it's one of those things that, you know, and I think we forget about it. Something that there's, you know, there's trade organizations for everything. And, you know, some of the things you know, it's like, oh, yeah, there was a haunted, like a Halloween haunted house trade show next to us one year. It's like, wow, okay.
That's crazy.
Wouldn't have thought that was something that was a thing, but it is a thing.
You know, speaking about TNNA, this is like a spontaneous kind of thought, because, you know, Power Pearls is like a split down the middle kind of audience. We've got designers or aspiring designers. And of course, the yarn crafter, the enthusiast is listening. And, you know, from the TNNA perspective, you know, because I'm a big cheerleader for TNNA, you know, I always have been ever since I started going. And it's really made an impact on my career, you know, in this industry. So how do you feel like it's helped you? I mean, what kind of impact has it made for your business?
Oh, wow. Yeah, I don't want to sound like too much of a cheerleader, because full disclosure, I'm the past president, the immediate past president of TNNA. So I've kind of, you know, I believe in it very much as well. You know, I think the organization itself is a really important part of what we do, what we can do. And it's the idea of, it's more than just the two trade shows a year. It's helping us do commerce 365 days a year. The shows specifically, to me, I think are really important, because I only get to reach out and touch people a couple times a year. I talk to people on the phone. I see people, you know, I interact with them on, you know, with email and in social media. But there's something very different about sitting across a table from someone, or getting a big hug when you see them in the lobby, and looking them directly in the eye and talking to them about what we can do together and to sell more yarn and to figure out together what is going to be what the consumer wants and how we can provide it to them. It's just a different way of dealing with people, and I think it's important to touch them. And The other thing is I think it is a lot more, it's about much more than what you do in your booth when you're talking about selling yarn. It's also about the relationships you build after hours when you're having dinner or you're at a cocktail party or you're just walking down the street to get from point A to point B and you're having a conversation with somebody. You learn a lot of neat things and you learn a lot of things that are valuable for your business. And you make friends. And that's another big piece of it for me is that I don't think everybody is lucky enough to be able to count people from all over the country and all over the world as friends. And that when you leave the show at the end of the weekend, you're saddened by the fact that they don't live in your neighborhood because that means you don't get to see them again for another 6 months.
I totally agree. I feel the same way. You know, it's one of those things where I get to the show and you're like running to hug somebody. Like
that's, yeah.
Like, where else can you do that? And I think that's a big part of it. You know, it's like I started going to TNNA in 2004 and I have cultivated amazing relationships. And just like you said before, you know, it's, yeah, you could email and ask for, you know, things through email and the phone and whatever, but there's, you know, there's nothing like FaceTime. There's nothing like being in a room with all these people and this energy. There's energy. Like it's palpable, right?
Absolutely.
And I rely on going to those shows every, you know, however many months, every 6 months to renew and reignite, you know, that excitement and this energy, this, you know, ideas. I mean, I come home with ideas like it's amazing, you know, just.
Yeah.
So the pages of my magazine are influenced by the things that I see there and the people I'm talking to. And it's just, yeah. So that's also great advice for, yeah, for anyone that's new to this industry, you know, because that's what it's, and you know, it's like, we're not in it for the money. I know I haven't been in the, it's funny. I mean, of course, I think when you're doing something that you're passionate about and you really believe in and you work hard, resources come and they're like a byproduct, right? It's not like, you know, like you can survive and, you know, you live a good life. And what that means is, I don't know, I mean, it's different for everybody, you know? It's like, no, I don't need a BMW. I'm cool with my Jetta. But everything else, you know, hey, I love my life the way it is. So I know where that stands for me, right? And being in the yarn industry is beautiful. You know, it's my passion. Yeah, I think that it's a wonderful world to be a part of.
Yeah. You know, it's absolutely a privilege to be able to work in something that you love. There was a guy who used to be in our building here in Chicago, and he sold industrial pumps. So the kind of pumps that would run the water from wherever up to, like, you know, the top floor of a 40-story apartment building. So everybody had water to, you know, wash their clothes and do the dishes and all, take a shower and all that sort of stuff. And I'm pretty sure he never got phone calls like I do, where we get people, they call up and they go, oh my gosh, the yarn came. It's beautiful. Thank you. And I'm guessing the pump guy didn't get that phone call very often. And it's that we get all the time. And there is just something so heartwarming when you get to do that kind of work.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, on my side of the fence, when I work with a new designer for the first time, and they're so thrilled and they're so excited that they're actually going to have a design in a magazine.
Oh, yeah.
I remember the first time I was published. I'll never forget it. It was a thrill. And I remember thinking, and they're giving me yarn and they're going to pay me. Wow. You know, so it's definitely a privilege. So, you know, what advice would you give someone wanting to start out in this industry? You know, because I, you know, we've got those people listening. What wisdom can you share at this point for them?
You know, we just finished talking about how wonderful it is. And now I'm going to be a little bit of Debbie Downer.
Should I go wah, wah, wah?
Yeah, exactly. It's a business. At the end of the day, it is a business. And you have to remember that and realize that if you tell somebody you'll do something for them, you do it. It is hard work. You're taking a risk of making your passion your vocation. And that doesn't always end up, you know, sometimes you have bad days. And if you've taken something you love and created something that does have pressure and does have stress about it, make sure you want to make that happen. And if it is just strictly your joy, it's okay to leave it there. But if you are going to take the step to do it, remember that it is a business and you have to treat it. You have to take care of your suppliers. You have to take care of the people that your customers. You know, there's that old saying of 9 to 5 with the customer and 5 to 9 for the customer. You're going to work a lot of hours to make it work. Make sure you have a good support system because you don't want to have to do this alone. And again, the idea too that it's business, so don't take everything personal. I can remember I dropped the ball on something very early on, and I called the customer and said, "Oh my gosh, I am so sorry. Please don't be mad at me." She looked at me, she says, "I'm not mad at you. This has nothing to do with you and me and our relationship. This is a business transaction. You dropped the ball. You're making it right, so we're okay. But don't forget that." And I was like, "Oh, okay." And, you know, it was a good lesson to know that I could step outside of myself and have it be a business transaction. Mm-hmm. And it's a different way of looking at it. And I think it's an important way to do it. But you do have to honor your commitments and make sure you take care of your people.
Sure. Yeah, and I think that can be a really hard thing to learn, you know, or to embrace, I should say.
Right.
You know, because we're humans and yeah, but when you can, I mean, it is possible to do, and it sounds like that you definitely mastered that, or maybe you do better sometimes than others. But it is a trait that is really important, I think, in any business situation.
Yes, well, certainly, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, people depend on you. Whichever side of the, you know, whether it's a consumer, whether it's a vendor or a customer, you know, it's their livelihoods depend on you doing what you tell them you will do. And that's kind of a big deal.
Absolutely. So have you received any advice that has always stuck with you through the years that you use?
Yeah, there's a couple. One of them, and this goes back to my old textbook days, under promise and over deliver. Super simple.
Yeah, super simple. That's it.
It's not very many words, but it's a pretty powerful thing to do. Another one that I like a lot was, this is my father-in-law used to always say that, you know, oh, you own your own business. You know, you work half days. You get to pick which 12 hours that is.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, it's like, because it isn't as easy. I think sometimes people think that, you know, and it's kind of funny too, is that you work a lot, and even things where you're just having dinner with your husband and you talk about business because it becomes such a part of your life. And it isn't like at the end of the day, you go, "Oh, I'm done here. See everybody tomorrow." When it's your business, you take it home with you. It's just part of, it ends up, I think, being in your DNA.
I mean, is that okay with you? Do you feel like that ever interferes with, you know, just sort of saying, okay, it's time to switch it off? Can you do that? Or do you want to do it?
I'm learning to, you know, and I've only had 13 years of practice. I'm doing better, but I still, you know, it is just part of what you do when you own a business. It's just part of your, again, it, you know, I don't know. Do I want to turn it off? There's days, but most of the time, you know, it's part of also my identity, I guess, now.
Yeah, you know, just thought I'd ask that because I think that sometimes, like as creatives, you know, coming from that perspective.
Sure.
You know, it's, excuse the metaphor, but, you know, we knit it all together, right? And I know I do. And sometimes that, I guess sometimes it could interfere. Like, let's say there is that significant other that doesn't get it, that, you know, you're on the computer or you want to design that thing or you, whatever it is, but you're so excited about it. So I think at times you have to kind of temper that, you know, obsessive, passionate compulsion to, you know.
Oh, you bet.
You know, with remembering others in your life that, you know, you may need to kind of pay attention to, you know what I mean? So I think sometimes it's sort of like that inner battle and that inner struggle that I'll admit I do, you know, I fight with that because I personally love to always be creating and working and thinking of new ideas. It's like you said about yourself, it's part of our DNA.
Yeah.
You know, it's in the blood.
Yeah, and it's a good thing to have it be that way. You know, and I can also remember one of the things my mom said to me just after I got started with Warner's Laces, and she was like, "Weren't you afraid to quit your job and all the security and the things that go along with that?" And I was like, "You know, Mom, I'm more afraid of spending the rest of my life in corporate America or in a cubicle." And I hadn't worked in a cubicle in a long time, but the idea of and always having a boss and not being allowed to make the decisions for myself. Some people might suggest I'm a little bit of a type A personality, and make being in charge is good for me.
Well, you know, what you just said about the whole boss thing, you know, and I think that I heard this, it was said so well, but you work for a company and you, like, this is from the entrepreneurial kind of mindset, right? You work for a company and you have one client, your boss. So
right.
If you lose that client, but when you work for yourself, you have many little bosses.
Yeah.
I mean, some people might say, oh, you know, but it's kind of an empowering way to look at things. If that is,
that.
Yeah. Isn't that cool? So yeah. I think that is a really great way to look at any kind of, you know, you're going into business and, like, you know, just putting your feelers out there. So you've got those many little bosses and, you know, you're staying scrappy, so to speak.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I like that.
Yeah. So how is Mrs. Crosby different than Lorna's Laces? Because you've got these two companies, they're somewhat similar. So, like, we've got the hand-dyed thing going on there with both, but what is it exactly? Because, you know, there is an interesting story behind the whole concept of Mrs. Crosby, too.
Yeah.
She's a dignified traveling lady.
Oh, absolutely. She's a ton of fun. Yeah, she's a ton of fun. I mean, she travels the world looking for things to inspire her. She's a delight. You should have her for tea.
I can't wait.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. I mean, she came about, again, I needed a new creative outlet. You know, I had been working with Lorna's Laces for 10 years, and it was time for me to figure out something. I think it was a creative outlet. It was the idea that I had purchased Lorna's Laces, and I wanted to have something that was mine. And not that Lorna's Laces isn't mine. It is. I mean, you do something for 10, 12, 14 years, whatever. It is, of course, mine. You know, certainly I springboarded from somebody else's original idea. But so Mrs. Crosby was kind of sprung from the need for me to have something of my own.
Hmm. Yeah, because I love the story. There's, like, more of a concept behind it, you know? And I love when I see you at the trade show, you've got, like, the suitcases and, you know, the yarn spilling out of the suitcases and, you know, she's just traveled all over. And it's like, this is a person? Do you know what I mean? So it's like, yeah, I think that right there is what makes it really, really special. So I love that collection. And yeah, I can definitely see you in it. And I can definitely see that it's definitely a more of a, like, a creative endeavor that you started. So you really definitely shine through there.
Sure.
Yeah. So, you know, we've been on for a while. So, and I know you have to go. You've got, you know, some things happening, but I know that you wanted to talk about a little special surprise, like a little giveaway that we're going to do. Do you want to share that?
Sure. We would love to give out to one of your lucky listeners. Ooh, lucky listeners. Oh, my illiterate. one of our string quintet kits. And the string quintets are Lorna's Laces mini skein sets. So there's 5 25-gram hanks of our shepherd sock yarn. So it's 535 yards. So each one's 507 yards. So we would love to have one of your listeners have one.
How exciting. Thank you. So
what?
You guys, if you want to enter, you can go to powerpearlspodcast.com/BethCasey to, you know, enter for your chance to win. So thank you so much. That's so, so generous of you, Beth. You know, before we wrap up, I just want to ask you one last big question. Can you share one of your personal habits or the overarching habit that you feel contributes to your success?
You know, you get up and you go and you do it every day. You know, I don't know that there's anything magical about it. Yeah, you just get up and I wish I had something that was super special for you. But you get up and you go to work every day and you make yarn and you do what you promise. You know, you make promises to people, you keep those promises, and then you get up and do it again tomorrow and the day after. It's not very profound. I wish it was.
No, it's, you know what though? It, in a way it is. I mean, it's just like, this is it, you know? And I had a guest on the show say once that early on, someone gave them advice that said, you know, you're not going to have a life. I know that sounds crazy, right? It's like another Debbie Downer moment. But she just said, okay, I really want this. So she resolved that this is what it would be like. Okay, like not that her life would be miserable, but that she would just be, this would be it. This would be a lot of work. And so she made the decision. And so like what you're saying, Beth, is I feel like you just, you know, you made the decision. You just get up and you do it. And it's so easy to talk yourself out of doing it. And that's the trick. It's like there's a difference between like once you cross that line and you make that decision to do it, then divine intervention comes in.
It is. It's sort of like making a decision to, you know, if you want to exercise, you can either say, oh, do I want to do it today? Or you just make a decision that every day, the first thing, you know, for me, it's like the first thing I do every day, I get out of bed and I go for a run. I don't say, oh, is it Monday, Wednesday, Friday? It's just every day I get up and I go for a run. And so it's not a conversation. It's not a decision. I just do it every day. And then it becomes part of your life and how you live your life. And it's kind of a nice way to live it because you know what's going on and you know what to expect out of your day. And so when you have, you know, when you're trying to create a business, you have to work it every day or else it's not going to happen and it's not going to happen for you.
And would you say that consistency plays a huge role in that?
Yeah, and that was what I was thinking is constancy. It is something you do. It's a constant in your life. And again, I guess I was Debbie Downer. I'm really sorry because...
Oh, no, that's fine. No, I think it's good to be this, you know, honest and open, really.
But the thing is that my life is amazing. Yarn has brought me so many great things. I mean, you know, the people are amazing. My life, you know, like you said earlier, my life is fantastic. I'm able to make a living in something that I love. And, you know, we all know lots and lots of people that have jobs that they enjoy, and we know people that have jobs that they don't enjoy, but they go to them because they have to keep body and soul together. And to be able to have Pretty String allow me to have all those things is a pretty amazing thing. And I couldn't be any happier, and I couldn't be any luckier. It's just great. I can't even describe how wonderful it is to have work that I find amazing.
That's great. That's so inspiring, you know, and I feel the same way. I mean, you have those days, though, where things do feel like a job, right? But because you love what you do so much, it's like, well, you got to deal with some of those days, you know, and then, you know, it just makes it worth it. You know, this passion makes it all worth it. So,
yeah, there's the spreadsheet days.
Yeah.
and then there's the creating a new season. And so you have both of them and they both have to get done. One's a little bit more fun, but the other one also is satisfying because it's taking care of things and getting, you know, you got to do the numbers part to make the pretty happen too.
Absolutely. So where can people learn more about you and Lorna's Laces and Mrs. Crosby?
So the Lorna's Laces website is www.lornaslaces.net. It's .net. That's a whole long story we won't go into today. And then Mrs. Crosby's website is www.mrscrosbyplays.com.
Oh, I like that. Plays. mrscrosbyplays.com. Love it. Well, Beth, this was a lot of fun. And thank you, you know, for working through all the little technical difficulties too.
Oh,
So enjoy the rest of your day and thanks again.
Oh, it was my pleasure. Thank you so much, Kara.
Well, that about wraps things up for today, and I hope that you felt inspired by my chat with Beth and that it allowed you to get a little look behind the curtain into a day of what it takes to design a yarn collection and, you know, what it means to run a yarn company. Also, if you want to get your chance to win the Spring Quintet mini skein set that Beth mentioned, you can go to powerpearlspodcast.com/Beth Casey, and Beth Casey is one word, and it's BethCasey. Beth Casey. So, also, check out the beautiful photos of this mini skein set in the show notes at powerpearlspodcast.com. And that about does it. So, thanks for listening, and I wish you the happiest of holidays, and I'll see you next time.